Guess where we're going to start today? Who has an appreciation? Yes, sir. I couldn't hear you. Appreciation of your wife and all she does for you and the family. Okay. Someone else. Yes. Appreciate that he's made the... Luella would appreciate that too. Yes. Appreciation for morning's breakfast, meeting new friends, and connecting. Anyone else? Yes. What's that? That's what I thought you said. She said, I appreciate the people that clean the bathrooms. Someone else, I thought I had saw a hand up over. Yes, Paul? The food and the volume of food for it. Oh, and the quality, yeah. Any other appreciations? Yes, sir, in the back. Amen. There's not like a happy birthday song for anniversaries, are there? So if there was, we'd sing it for you. Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah. Appreciation to his wife and to the Lord. Yes, ma'am. Happy birthday, Diane. One more. Yes, ma'am. Appreciation that we can worship God freely without persecution in our country. Amen. Well, we're going to, can you get me up there? Hey, there we are. Okay. Our ministry name is Connect Us for Life. I also go by Marriage for Life because I have a business curriculum. And first that I did my business curriculum, my company was still Marriage for Life officially. They're like, why are we having marriage people show up to teach us about leadership? So we changed the name to Connect Us for Life. But I'm also starting a national movement. You can join me on Facebook. It's called Children Against Divorce. What has brought our nation to where it is today is divorce. And if you're here if you're hearing your divorce, it's not to beat you up. It really isn't. Many of you probably don't know, the last year I've been working for Governor Brownback in Kansas. We're running the statewide healthy marriage initiatives in Kansas for him and the fatherhood initiatives. Never worked in state government before. Wasn't looking for the job. And glad that I went. I'm now back in Florida rebuilding my ministry since I let it lay dormant for a good year. But I learned a lot while I was there. I have a vision for where this nation's headed regarding marriage and family, and I'm here to tell you it's not good. I really believe that. The gay agenda is advancing. It's advancing, and it will eventually, I believe, take over all 50 states. But gay marriages has not led to where our nation is today. It was the breakdown of marriage and family. It was divorce that's the culprit. And so I am really fervently, if you haven't figured it out, I believe in healthy relationships. I want single people to make good decisions so they have a lifetime of love. Because nobody gets married to end up getting divorced. Except those that have prenups. Other than them, nobody does. Well, you think about it, a prenup is a what? It's an escape clause. There's no commitment. Commitment is limited. Under these conditions, I'm here, but if this happens, I'm protecting myself. I won't judge it, but there's a limitation on commitment. Marriage is a covenant. And I granted, for every divorce, there's the one who is the victim of it and the one that wanted it. Sadly, the church has always treated the victim of divorce in a very unloving and caring way, and that was wrong. However, it is the culprit, and I am going to stand against it. And if you'd like to join me, go to Facebook, click on Children Against Divorce. Once I can raise the money, we're a nonprofit. I want to build the website for it. I already bought the domain name, and I'm going to try and make it like Mothers Against Drunk Drivers and all that kind of thing. Now, how many people here are parents? You ever had those struggles with your children? I have a remedy for you. Here it is. This might help. I sell these in the back. So if you're having struggles, we got those back there at the Marriage for Life table, right? And this one I show everywhere. A couple of days ago, you probably heard Jerry yell at me a phrase. This is where it comes from, so I won't tell you this. If you love Bob Newhart, you will thoroughly enjoy this because this is one of my favorite clips of all time. Isn't that a great clip? Oh, people will start going around going, stop it, from now on. But reality is, let me ask you something, does that really work? No, we laugh about it, but that's how we treat each other. And you can get a sense of how unfeeling, how insensitive, and how immature it is. When people say, stop it, what it really means is I don't want to be bothered by you. And yet people are hurting and wounded. And the interesting thing is you never see that spirit, ever see that spirit in Christ's heart. It doesn't exist. And yet something within us will tell people those kinds of things. Stop it. Suck it up. Just pray about it. It's all the same message. But what we're really saying is I don't care. I don't care. But there are other people you just want to say it to. I admit it up front. Yeah. Someone asked me yesterday, somebody asked that I have a book. Yes, it's called Relationships for Life. This is not a marriage book. This is a lot of my thinking on healthy relationships, about bonding and attachment, those things. So if you go to our website, Marriage for Life, you can pick it up there. All righty. Matter of fact, I will put a plug in for Keith O'Gork, one of the board members here. I got it published through their company, so I was grateful. Attitude. We cannot choose how many years we will live, but we can choose how much life those years will have. We cannot control the beauty of our faith, but you can control the expression on it. You cannot control life's difficult moments, but you can choose to make life less difficult. We cannot control the negative atmosphere of the world, but we can control the atmosphere of our minds. Too often, we try to choose and control things we cannot. Too seldom, we choose to control what we can, which is our what? Our attitude. And I argue that people who are spiritually mature will always operate, for the most part, out of a good attitude. Because a good attitude comes out of healthy spiritual and emotional maturity and development. And the scriptures really are not meant to make you smarter. Because knowledge puffs up, Paul says. But what? It's love that edifies. And I've hopefully established for you, or at least try to establish, healthy love can only be established and maintained in a healthy way at a healthy, mature adult state. And some people came up to me yesterday and said, gosh, Rick, you know, I'm an emotional whatever. You know, and my response to you is, if you recognize you're an emotional infant or an adolescent or child, here's my answer to that. So what? Don't beat yourself up for it. So what? It just is. The only question is, what do you want to do about it? Got it? Beating yourself up will do nothing. Romans 8:1, therefore there is now no condemnation. See, a healthy, good attitude goes, okay, so I am. I have this struggle. What are you going to do about it? And then move forward to resolve what you need to figure out, resolve what you need to do, and so you make it better tomorrow. I live in the possibilities tomorrow. I'm not going to live in the past of the issues. I can't change what was. I can only change what is to make it better tomorrow. Got it? And I can create possibilities. Because all things are what? Possible. Do you really believe that all things are possible? Think about it. Do you really believe that all things are possible? I would submit to you, you would say yes, but you really don't. Because if you really believe that all things are possible, how come the possibilities that you dream of aren't happening? So I wrote a message a while back called All Things Are Possible. However, all things are not probable. And what decreases the probability of the possibilities for your life? You do. You do. And that's a whole nother message. You can pick it up at Northbrook Church's website. But it's a really good one. Okay. Bonding and intimacy. We've been talking about that this week. Attachment and bonding and how God bonds us. And we bond by meeting needs. And we care about enough about needs. When people's needs are met, they feel loved. So bonding here is a need for connection and relational intimacy. We saw that it's not good for man to be what? Alone. And man's greatest dilemma, mankind's greatest dilemma, is his aloneness issues. And this has nothing to do with marriage. That's why I've not been teaching about marriage all week. I've been teaching about relationships. Everything we've talked about applies in any relationship, parent, child, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, co-worker to co-worker. If you're an employer, you could apply these principles into your workplace. I'll be speaking next week in Ohio to the metal treating industry, teaching their young executives some skills for emotional intelligence in the workplace and how to listen better to what's going on their employees. So there's two things that God designed your brain to have. We won't go heavy into this. If you come to the marriage seminar, we're going to really delve into this in the marriage seminar heavy. But there's two things your brain has to have in order to bond to another person. First one is vulnerability. Vulnerability. Your brain is how you confide. Your brain attaches through confiding. But if I'm confiding in you, I have to become what? Vulnerable. Well, if you're not a safe person, you can probably guarantee that I'm not going to be vulnerable around you, right? So vulnerability really has to do about being emotionally open to another person. And it's difficult to bond and attach to a person who is not emotionally open to you. Did you get that? Guys, you need to hear this. Our culture has taught us, and your parents did it through their rearing. They did it through their rearing. You think about it. If a little boy, little girl, say 3 or 4 years old, they both fall down and skin their knees, and they're crying. Well, the physical needs are, you know, are back teen, right? But what do you think the caress needs are? That's that list you got yesterday. And by the way, some people didn't get a list, so we're going to make some more copies for tomorrow, and we'll have them up here for you. All right? Some more of those lists. But what do you think the caress need is? They need comfort, right? And some attention. Does anybody care that I'm hurting? And they need that comforted. So what do we do with that little girl? We pick her up, right? We draw her in, and we comfort her, and we're giving her attention. She is actually bonding and attaching to you because you're doing what her brain needs to feel bonded and attached. What do we say to a little boy? Suck it up. Get over it. You're not hurt. Why are they crying then? What you've actually trained him to do is to repress his emotional side, to shut it off. And then you wonder why when he gets married, he's emotionally aloof and distant. And this is why now women used to stay in loveless marriages because the culture had shame against divorce. The shame against divorce is no longer exists, even in the church. Women are walking away. Why? Emotionally distant men. But they were raised to be that way. Shut it down. Suck it up. Stop it. You're not hurt. And if you ever watch someone stuff their emotions, you actually watch their body, they'll swallow. Because the act of shutting the emotion down will cause you to swallow. Okay. Well, let me tell you, that energy still in the limbic brain, it's still there, and it will act itself out one way or another. Because negative tension is still better than what? No attention. You don't give me affection, Dad, then I'll find a way to get it. Even if I have to go get sex from a lot of girls, or if I have to go get it from a guy, or I have to go act it out in sports and not care about you anymore. Because, see, the needs will be met. They must be met. Problem is, Satan gives you what? Who remembers from the second day? Rat poison. And rat poison meets the need, doesn't it? So we've got to be vulnerable. Second thing is, you got to be physically close. The brain understands distance. It can feel it. If you come to a marriage seminar, I will prove it to you because I have exercises that will get you in touch with what your brain's telling you. Become aware of how God wired your brain. You're just not aware what your brain does. But your brain can sense space. It can sense distance. So the brain attaches when these two things are taking place, when you're vulnerable and when you're physically close. This is why I shared with you the daily touch point, and I wanted you to do appreciations. Today, we're going to do the whole thing. All right? Today, we're going to put into practice some of the things you hear in Scripture, like speak the truth in love. Listen to this. Paul says in Ephesians 4, then we will no longer be like children. He's talking everything before that. He talks about maturity in the faith. He said, then we will no longer be like children. Think about emotional stages of development. Forever changing our minds about what we believe because someone else has told us something different or because someone has cleverly lied to us and made the lie sound like the truth. Instead, we will hold to the truth in love. Or as the King James and other versions say, we will speak the truth in love. That's what I told you. Love has got a tone to it. Becoming more and more in every way like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. Under his direction, the whole body is fitted together perfectly. As each part does its own special work, it helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing in full of love. Thus, you cannot live your faith out by yourself. It is not good that man should be what? Christianity came from the Middle East. It is, in essence, a communal faith. You cannot live it out by yourself. We need each other. Verse 17, with the Lord's authority, let me say this. Live no longer as the ungodly do, for they are hopelessly confused. Their closed minds, they think they know it all. They know what they know, but they don't know that they don't know. With their closed minds, they're full of darkness. They are far away from the life of God because they have shut their minds and hardened their hearts. That's the emotional part. They shut their minds down and they're emotionally detached. They've hardened their hearts against him. They don't care anymore. I've been talking a lot about care. They don't care anymore about right and wrong. They have given themselves over to immoral ways. Their lives are filled with all kinds of impurity and greed. But that isn't what you were taught when you learned about Christ. Since you have heard all about him and have learned the truth that is in Jesus, throw off the old nature and your former way of life. Throwing off is something that you must do. But if you're going to throw off something, you've got to do what? You've got to put something on. Throw off your old nature and your former way of life, which is rotten through and through, full of lust and deception. Instead, there must be a spiritual renewal of your thoughts and attitudes. You must display a new nature because you are a new person, created in God's likeness, righteous, holy, and true. So, put away all falsehood and tell your neighbor the truth because we belong to each other. And don't sin. Don't sin by letting anger gain control of you. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a mighty foothold to the devil. Don't use foul or abusive language. That's all low brain stuff. That's all emotional lack of emotional, what's the word? What's it? Maturity, thank you. All of that stuff comes from the low brain, an immature mind. I've taught my kids for years, why do people cuss? Because they're mad. I said, no, they cuss because they have a deficiency in language. They have a deficiency in language. All cussing is a feeble mind trying to exert itself forcefully. There are thousands of words in the English language for people to express themselves, and these people, when angry, confine themselves to a few. That's a feeble mind. With all the language and all the words you could choose to use, you default to that? Healthy, mature people don't go there. But immature people will. You choose how you want to speak and present yourself. What you say tells a lot about who you are. The words you use. Let everything you say, Paul says here, be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. And do not bring sorrow to God's Holy Spirit by the way you live. Remember, he is the one who has identified you as his own, guaranteeing that you will be saved on the day of redemption. And get rid of all bitterness. We're going to talk about this tomorrow in forgiveness. Get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger, harsh words and slander, as well as all types of malicious behavior. Instead, be kind one to another. Tender-hearted. Emotional openness. If you're going to be tender-hearted, you've got to be in touch with your own emotional self. Forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Is all of that possible? Yes, it is. Do not assume that none of what he just said is impossible to do. All of it is possible. Because all things are what? Possible through Christ. So the only reason those things aren't happening in your life isn't because it's not possible. It's because for you it's not probable. And the reason it's not probable isn't because of those people or those circumstances. It's really because of you. You got to look in the mirror. And that's what I had to start doing. I learned curse words. That's all my father liked to use. But that's what emotional adolescents use, a feeble mind expressing yourself forcefully. But when I cleaned up my language and realized there's a lot more words out there I can use, I started choosing those words instead. I learned to not engage a fool in their folly, even when the fool wanted to. And I learned really quick that a fool appears wise when he keeps his mouth shut. I embraced that one early on. I finally figured out not everything I felt I needed to say needed to be said. And when I kept my mouth shut, people thought I looked smart. They don't know I was just hanging on to that one stupid verse, trusting that it really meant something. And then I found that it did. But what I also found out was I was actually practicing self-control. You got it? And so if we're going to attach and we're going to connect, we've got to learn to be vulnerable. We've got to learn to be physically close. So what we're going to do, now how many people in here are single? Where's all my single folks? All right. All the single folks, hopefully you have a friend that you can connect to, all right? So I want everybody to have at least somebody because we're going to practice a daily touch point. Now you think, well, what is a daily touch point? I'm going to go over it with you. It's a confiding exercise. And when we go over the confiding exercise, I want everybody to be able to do this with somebody, all right? Before I go there, real quickly, in the Hebrew language, there are three words that we translate into one English word. It's the English word intimate or a variation of the word intimacy. But the three words that we translate into one English word are actually three different Hebrew words with three different meanings. The first Hebrew word that we translate into intimacy is the Hebrew word yada. Yada speaks of a deep personal awareness of. It's a deep a sense of wanting to know someone at a deeper level. You'll find it in Job 19:14 where it says, "My intimate friends." There's our word intimate, but what it's literally saying is our word intimate means close. So if you did an English reading of that, it would look like my close friends. What it's really saying is my friends that know me deeply have forsaken me. Now, what is yada? Think about it back here. Some of you are dating. Some of you used to date. Some of you are married and quit dating. By the way, how do you know a dating couple from a married couple in a restaurant? Anybody know? Dating couples are talking. Because married couples don't date. They just go out to eat, and they're not the same. They're not the same. Married couples go out to eat. Dating couples are talking because they're out on a date. Married couples just go out to eat. Anyway, that's a side note. When you were dating, you'd call each other. Remember those days? And when you call each other 3-4 times a day, you talk like crazy, right? Morning, afternoon, night, maybe for hours. And then you went down the road of dating, and eventually you decided to get married, and you walked down an aisle, right? Somebody said a few words, you kissed, sent you out, you're now married. And then down the road of marriage, for the majority of couples still call each other down the road of marriage. But when they call each other, a question shows up early in the conversation. Who knows what the question is, or a variation of the question? What'd you want? Now, here's my question to you, my brothers and sisters that are married. Way back here, actually all of us, way back here, when you were dating and called each other, who asked that question? Nobody did. Well then, how come down the road of marriage, when you call each other, it's because you want or need something, and if you don't want or need something, you don't call. But back here, nobody asked that question. Well, you didn't know. What you didn't know is you were doing yada. You called because you wanted to know. Down the road of marriage, I don't want to know. And so I don't call. Every day I call my wife twice a day and my kids to do yada. Even if that means I leave them a voicemail message. Hey, just calling, tell you hi and I love you. I was thinking of you. Think you're awesome. Dad. My kids can never tell me I did not want to know. Every day, Abba Father, he wants to know. He says to you, talk to me. Tell me, what's going on? How you feeling? He wants you to confide in him. Because he wants to what? He wants to know. Now, if I want to get to know, is it Mike? I remember it. Okay. If I want to get to know Mike, I got to do yada. But Mike sits there and I go, Mike, how you doing? Fine. Did you have a good day? Yep. You okay? Uh-huh. What's the message he's sending me? I don't want to talk. I don't want to be known. Second Hebrew word sowed. It means to reveal, to disclose. It speaks of God revealing himself to us. You'll find it in Proverbs 3:32. It says he is intimate with the upright. There's our English word, but what it's literally saying is God reveals himself with the upright. So if I want to know, and Mike opens up and shares, and Mike wants to know, and I open up and share, does that sound like talking to you? Does it? Does it? Yes. I've already told you, God wired your brain by communicating in order to bond. It's when you confide. I got to want to know. He's got to want to share what's inside of him. The word sowed literally means to reveal a secret. To disclose a secret. Because see, whatever's inside of him is a what? Is a secret. How he thinks and how he feels is a secret. But if I am not a saved person, then he's not going to reveal the what? The secret. He'll hold it inside, or he'll go reveal it to somebody else who does care. And Satan will send someone along. Now, yada and sowed by themselves won't bond you. Let's say I go home. Luella's banging pots and pans around, obviously upset. I'm a psychologist, not mentioned living with her a long time. I can figure that one out. And I do yada. Hey, you look upset. What's wrong? That's yada. She goes, let me tell you about my day. And for 15 minutes, she dumps all this stuff, right? I did yada, she did sowed. And at the end of her dumping all that stuff, I go, wow, sounds like you've had a rough day. Hope you get over it. Dinner ready yet? No intimacy that night, that's for sure. The bottom line is, yada and sowed won't bond you by themselves. Third Hebrew word. It's the Hebrew word sakan. Sakan actually is about it's the motivation behind why God does yada and sowed with you. Sakan literally means caring involvement. Caring involvement. You'll find it in Psalm 139, verse 3, where it says, he is intimately acquainted with all my ways. What it literally is saying is God is caringly involved in all of your ways. And now you notice how the Hebrew language makes it clear that there's no distinction between care and involvement, that care and involvement are not distinct. They are intricately linked together because wherever your care is, you're going to find involvement. So if I cared more about my ministry than my marriage, where are you going to find me more involved? My ministry. If I care more about fishing than my kids, where are you going to find me more involved? In fishing. If I care more about me, myself, and I, then my marriage, then Luella. Where are you going to find me more involved? And me, myself, and I. See, everybody cares about something. It just depends on where your care is placed. And the reason you have the marriage you have, or maybe you have the problem with your kids you have, or the problem you have with these areas in your life is maybe because you don't care enough to fix the relationship. So everybody cares about something. So you ask, well, God, why are you involved in all my ways? Now you think about it. He's involved in all of your ways. Lord, why are you involved in all of my ways? Simple, Rick. I care about all your ways. And since I care about all your ways, I get involved in all your ways. It's the care that drives it. So let me ask you, what do you care about? Because you care about something. Every human cares about something. Even if it's only about themselves. Where's your care? That's why I've come to realize I think in psychology and counseling, we make things too complex now. We have all these psychological terms and languages and diagnoses and processes. I go, no, they just don't care enough. Wow, but there's all these reasons. I get all the reasons. I had all the reasons. The bottom line is I still chose not to what? Care. Ah, but let a divorce happen. Let your kids walk away from you. Watch you get fired. Let some tragedy befall you. And all of a sudden, all those things in your past don't matter anymore. For whatever reason, today, now, in this moment, you start to what? Care. Sad that you didn't choose to care years before. Because now there's a lot of broken bodies and hurt and pain that you would have avoided in yourself and others had you only chose to care way back then. What keeps you from caring? When you care about your marriage, you'll get involved in it. And not until. You may say, well, I care. I go, you're right. You just don't care enough. And when you do care enough, you'll get involved. When you care more about wanting to understand why your kids are doing what they're doing rather than what they're doing, thinking fallenness and neediness, then you'll get involved in why they do what they do rather than just what they do. Because now you're starting to care for the whys rather than just the behavior. That makes sense? So confiding is the key to bonding. So we're going to put all these three things together right now in this exercise. Now, you all had your cards, so hopefully you still have them. You may not have brought them with you, but this will be up here on the screen. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to confide in appreciation. And the exercise here is if you're with your spouse, you have to share an appreciation about your spouse to your spouse. All right? If your kids are with you, don't go, everybody, you know, work in pairs, basically. Let's do it that way. And if there's a odd, I don't mean odd like odd strange, but if there's a person that doesn't have somebody, then Paul or Jerry, depending on the gender, would you work with them so that we can even things out? So if there's an odd person out that doesn't have somebody, we have somebody who will work with you. Everybody's going to practice this confiding skill. Now, so we're going to share an appreciation. What is a puzzle? Your brain makes an assumption about everything that it sees at 1/200th of a second, all right? So your name again is Craig. Craig's sitting here on the front row, legs crossed like this, all right? Now, in my old insecure days, if I saw that, my brain would say automatically 1/200th of a second, I just don't know what my brain said it is. My brain says it, but my brain says to me, he doesn't like me. That's what it says. Because remember, your brain makes an assumption about everything, but it makes the assumption based off your history. So my brain would see that and go, he doesn't like me, he's bored with me. So if he raises his hand to ask a question, I'm not calling on him because he doesn't like me. We all do it. Your brain makes assumptions about everything, but you never check out your what? You never check out the assumption. For all I know, Craig's got gas and he's just trying to hold it in. I don't know. Now he's... I just don't know. So what you do here is, rather than assume, ask it as a puzzle. Rather than saying, why are you always so angry? Go, I'm puzzled as to why you seem angry. Well, I'm not. I just got a stomachache. Okay. Check it out as a puzzle. It's a lot more mature. And you don't assume. You check out your assumption. So a puzzle is for you to check out assumption. Complaint with a recommendation for change. State your complaint and what you want different. For here, you can say it real simple. I notice and I prefer. See, I came home from one of my trips working with the U.S. Army out at Fort Sill. Been doing reintegration treats with soldiers and their wives. And I came home, had my media luggage, and I put it by the door into my garage office there. And Luella's old way of doing things was, you don't care about how this house looks. I went, what? Yeah, you know, I can't keep this house clean. You come home, you throw your luggage there. That's complaining. It gets you more what you don't want. But we've grown and matured a lot. And so she came downstairs the day after I got back. She says, I have a complaint with a request for change. I said, what's that? She says, I noticed when you come back from your trips, you have a tendency to put your baggage there. What I would prefer, Rick, is that you get what you need out of it and then put them in the closet. Which one's much more mature and healthy? That is. So if you have a complaint, state the complaint. Very businesslike. I notice, and what they do, here's what I want different. Because see, you can complain and complain and complain all you want, but your partner doesn't know what you want different. And complaining doesn't get you anywhere. If you want to know how to deal with a complaint and request for change to really solve a problem, you got to come September or April. New information is whatever you want to share your partner doesn't know that's of interest to you. Can be anything. If I can't share with Luella what's new for me and things I've learned, and if I can't share them because you sent the message you don't care to hear, that's fine. I'll go share them with somebody else who does care to hear. Because you taught me not to share with you. So new information is anything. Here's an example of new information. www.weatherwars.info. There's a guy who's got a master's in meteorology. He posts pictures of contrails in the sky and all kinds of stuff. He believes that the U.S. government, the Russian mafia, and the Japanese mafia are perfecting an electromagnetic wave technology to create the massive storms we've been having in order to shut down our economy. Somebody has developed a conspiracy theory around weather. I just find that fascinating. That's new information. And you may think it's stupid that I like it, but you go, well, thanks for sharing, Rick. I see that's of interest to you. Yeah, it is. Just think it's odd. If I can't share it with Luella, then I'll go share it with somebody. That makes sense? So new information, pray about. This is what you, when you want your partner to pray about something. And then I argue after you do the daily touch point, pray about the things that people ask you to pray about. So here's an opportunity for your family real quickly to just say a prayer about those things. And lastly, hopes or dreams, something you wish or hope for. So this is real simple. It doesn't take long to do. So here's what I want you to do. Turn and face each other. And I want you to go through each of these. So here's how it works. I get to share an appreciation, and after I share mine, Luella shares hers. Then I share a puzzle. If I have a puzzle, then she'll share one. If I have a complaint, I'll share it with a request for change in the form of I notice and I prefer. I notice, here's the complaint, here's what I prefer different. All right? So go practice that, and we'll come back together in about 5-6 minutes. Go for it. Practice the skill. All right. Let's stop right there. If you need to finish it, feel free to go finish it. I encourage you to do this every day. I did this with my family growing up around the breakfast table. I wouldn't use all of them, but I always usually stuck to appreciations or hopes or new information, those kind of things, just to teach my kids confiding and how to share and those kind of things, because I want to be able to do that later when they are adults. And so what was it like for you? Awkward? What was awkward about it? Thank you. He said it was awkward, but one of the things he said, there's a fear. Vulnerability means you have to move past your what? Your fears. Let me say this. If you're a married couple in here and your marriage is struggling, this is going to be very difficult for you. Because when couples get in conflict, first thing they do is they shut down emotionally and they distance physically. It's what your brain's going to do automatically, 1/2,000th of a second. You don't want to be vulnerable or physically close to someone you're in conflict with. Your brain wants to stay away from them. That is why couples come for counseling. They will do this regardless. I don't feel like it. Good. Do it anyways. Because if you don't do what your brain has to have in order to reconnect, you'll never get there. So this is a very basic skill that allows your brain to start to reconnect. But yes, if you're in conflict, it takes courage. I get that. Luella and I have been there before. But I cared more about getting where I wanted to be and not letting the fear rule me. Where there's fear, there is not faith, 1 John 4:17 and 18. And where there's faith, fear won't exist. Because perfect love casts out fear. Someone else, what was it like? Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. It goes against that early programming in your brain from your childhood. Yeah. And so thinking about that, how did it feel while you're doing it? Okay. Was there any positive feelings to it though?
Oh yeah.
Then hang on to that. Got it? You're focusing on the negative side. I want to bring you to, there's something that was pleasurable in it, wasn't it? Focus on that part. All right, someone, yes.
Stop
it. Yeah. That works. Yes, ma'am. It's fun talking that much to him, she said. Amen. But it's true. A lot of couples married a long time. Do you know what the group... Do you know the age group right now that is divorcing 3 times faster than any other age group in America? Ages 50 and above. The baby boomers married ages 50 and above are throwing away 30-year-plus marriages in 3 times faster than any age group. Those seasoned citizens that built this nation are the highest divorce rate right now in the country. The mental health field is given, and the media has given a name to it. They call it gray divorce. And what was that old vice president's name? Al Gore. He made it public when he went through his divorce. It became very public in the media. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and if you keep assuming, that tells me I'm not going to what? I'm not going to share. You have to listen. Anyone else? That's okay. You don't have a complaint every day. You don't have a complaint. You don't have a puzzle. You don't have a puzzle. But you could always muster up an appreciation. I guarantee you. I can think of some really weird things to think to appreciate. I had to do it once for a guy. I don't appreciate nothing. I said, not a thing. Nothing. Do you appreciate she wipes herself? We asked. Didn't appreciate that. Jeez. All that is the stubborn mind that doesn't want to what? That doesn't want to learn and grow. You can always find an appreciation, brothers and sisters, if you care enough to look for it. All right? This been helpful? Just do a touch point as often as you want. We call it daily. We call it daily. My wife and I kind of live this way, so we share a lot now, and I always share appreciation. She shares them, and it's just kind of those things. And here's the other part. You don't have to do it in a structured way over time. You can use the parts as you want it. Like I might go, hey, Luella, I got some new information for you. And she goes, oh, what is it? And I tell her. Or she goes, Rick, I got a puzzle. Okay, what is it? Or like the time I told you, I've got a complaint with a request for change. Okay, what is it? I don't have to take it personal because this is stuff that's inside of her and she's just confiding what's inside of her. Do I just care to listen and care that it's inside of her? Yes. If I need to work on it, and that's the back side of that card I gave you. Come to the seminar, we'll go through the back side. Because the back side of that card is a skill on how to make a complaint with a request for change when you have to work on an issue. You don't use this, you use the back side. And that's a lot more structure. Okay? Has this been helpful? Then grow, have a great rest of the day, and thanks for allowing me to give another little part of our life to you. Blessings to you.